Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are a Paranormal Chicks.
Episode 393. Well, y'all know how we have the cruise coming up. Go to crimewaveatsea.com/creep if you want to get in on that. But I was like, okay, I need to get my bladder stretched before we go.
As one does, you know?
You know, my interstitial girlies will completely understand. So I was like, I got to get my bladder stretched. So I had to follow up with my urologist so I could get that on the books. Well, if you ever want to feel old, turn 40. Because, all right, when you go to the urologist, you know, they always take an x-ray to make sure my kidney stones are where they're supposed to be. And they were. But he told me, he said, by the way, he said, just, you know, be careful that don't get on like bouncy stuff, like, you know, in the waves and stuff in the ocean to like dislodge them, I guess. I was like, oh, fuck, I didn't think about that. But anyway.
Well, there goes our banana boat ride.
So before they do the x-ray, you know, they got to make sure you're not pregnant. This nurse did not ask me if I was pregnant. She asked me, do you still get periods? Still, not when was your last period? Like, any chance you're pregnant? No. Do you still get periods?
You mean to tell me that people are lucky enough in their 40s to not get periods anymore?
Still get periods.
Because I just want to be like, ma'am, who?
Well, then also I pulled a total carry because I just took my cell phone and my key in because I always just have my car key separate from all things because I can't handle a lot of keys. And I went to pull my key out of my pocket to get the x-ray and my little loop-de-loo got hung on my pants on like this one rogue string.
Oh my God.
The lady doing the x-ray had to unhook it for me. I was like, oh, pardon the baby powder, but can you help me out? And then when she took me back to the room, I went to take my key back out of my pocket and it like yeeted itself out of my hand and like skidded across the floor. I was like, this damn key. But then when the scheduler came in to schedule me for the bladder procedure, she said, okay, so, you know, told me all the things. And before you do this, we need you to go to the lab, get some blood drawn and an EKG. I was like, an EKG? I've never had to do that. Oh, is it because I'm big? And she goes, it's because you're 40. Oh, she said, we do it on everybody over 40. I was like, oh. I expected her fully to be like, yeah, anybody with a BMI over like X number, you know, we have to do it. No, 40. I think I'd rather the BMI.
Right.
And then that very day, okay, you know, I had the x-ray, I had the EKG, and I had the blood work. Then my mom calls me that afternoon, and her blood pressure is through the roof, and she done called the ambulance for herself, and she was on the way to the hospital. Well, when she got there, she got an EKG, she got an x-ray, she got a urine test, she got, like, everything I had. I said, Mom, why are you trying to copy me today? I was like, dang. Now, she did get a head CT. I didn't get that. But she did everything I did.
Blood work.
I said, dang, Mom, why are you copying me? But she's okay. Her heart rate was going crazy. We don't know yet. She's getting a monitor next week, and we'll find out. But all's good.
Did you get the hat, though, or did you?
I sure did. I said, can I get a hat? She was like, yeah, of course. And I was like, so I just pour it in there? She said, yeah, but I can do it if you need me to. And I was like, nah, girl, I got it.
It's a game changer, right?
Well, then my mom, for her urine test, I said, can we get a hat? And she was like, yeah. And then mom was peeing. I said, Mom, scoot up. Like, she wasn't even peeing in the hat.
Oh, God.
She said, am I peeing now? I was like, scoot up. Is it going in now? I don't fucking know. Just pee. God damn. They threw shade at her at the ER, though. She had to go to the bathroom again. They said, you got to go again? You think you got a UTI?
But she did.
She technically did, but this was her normal.
Yeah.
She an interstitial girly, too.
Oh, Lord.
Colby said, there's less expensive ways to hang out with us, you know? But, oh, my God, it was so freaking hot in that ER room. And, you know, Colby works in the engineering department at this hospital. And so he, like, went to the mainest thermostat thing and was, like, turning it down. And that wasn't working. So he had, like, supervisors looking at it. One of his coworkers came in, climbed a ladder, was, like, up in the ceiling trying to get it for us. I was like, man, when Colby's women say they're hot, he makes shit happen.
Uh-huh. Hell, I'm surprised you didn't bring your fan anyway.
I did.
No, your big, big fan.
Oh, no, no. Why was it work? I had my handheld, though.
That handheld is so fucking loud.
It really is.
I mean,
it's
so powerful. Seriously, like, I remember us being on the walk, and I was, like, kind of away from Chris, and I just, like, put it to him, and he was like, what the fuck? Like, what is this so monsoon that's coming through?
Yeah. Okay, hurricane, not monsoon, but yeah. Okay.
You know what? Whatever. I mean, it was kind of a monsoon because I was sweating.
And it was raining.
It was raining.
Really, it was just like the fan wicking your sweat off onto him. And he's like, is it raining? And it's like, no, it's my sweat. Gross.
Oh, God. Well, we've got our Halloween decorations up, like the inside.
Really?
Yep. And I just now we have to make the ambiance, you know, like where I had you last year.
Poor Chris. I mean, thank God for Chris.
To be able to reach and put the lights up. Mm-hmm. But remember, they weren't sticking right. So we have to figure something else out.
Yeah. And I ripped your paint off. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully he doesn't, but it's okay. But we have to put like that kind of stuff up. But it makes my heart happy with the Halloween stuff. It really makes me want to get rid of the house in front of us, my mom and dad's old house, so much. Because it's like, if I put out decorations, you can't see them at all. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's like, let's not do that. But I do want to one day like have some blow ups like you, because I saw this classic blow up, like more of the classic cat, like the orange, the yellow, the black.
I thought you hated blow ups.
I know. Well, you got me in on them when we went to Houston that time. But then I didn't like it because we wouldn't leave it up all the time.
Yeah, I leave them up all the time. I don't understand turning them off.
Yeah, you learned the lesson in Houston because it was a snowman. It was Frosty the Snowman, and we had it, but we would turn it off, and it got super disgusting, and we couldn't clean it.
I don't remember that. I do remember trying to figure out how to run those goddamn extension cords, though.
Yes.
That was a fucking Rubik's Cube.
It was. But yeah, so I was like, oh, no, I hate them. Like, they're so, like,
yeah, they don't last very long when you leave them going all the time. But it's like, what's the point? Because if you turn them off while you're sleeping and while you're gone for the day, they're on for 2 hours, you know?
Yeah. Well, and again, they get messed up that way.
Yeah, dirty.
But y'all will hear this the day after. But Sunday, me and Tiffany are starting our Halloween movie marathon, and we're doing Friday the 13th this year. Last year we did Halloween, and so now like we've already got them all in order, so we're gonna know exactly which way. And so we're starting that. So if y'all want to start with us, you definitely can, because we're gonna watch the first two Saturday.
Well, Saturday we got to go to the woods because Colby's got to do something for the deer. Don't know. We're gonna go see his mom, and then we're gonna have my mom's birthday dinner that night. And then I was thinking maybe Sunday try to do decorations, because it's like October. We've usually done been had them up.
Yeah.
You know, October is usually when we're like, all right, let's go do the outside stuff now.
Yeah.
Life's been lifing. Well, before we get into Donna's story, we have to talk about BetterHelp, because this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. And look, October 10th is World Mental Health Day. And this year, BetterHelp is saying thank you to the people who honestly don't get enough credit. Therapists.
Because behind every story of someone making progress or finally feeling like themselves again is a therapist who showed up, listened, and asked that one question that just hits you right in the soul.
I mean, therapy moments can be life-changing. It was for me. And sometimes it's just crying in a safe space. Sometimes it's realizing you can set boundaries. Sometimes it's just having someone to remind you that you're not broken, you're human.
God, I love that. You're not broken, you're human. Well, we can all laugh and joke about ghosts, double chins, and all the spooky stuff in life, but life does get real scary too. And having someone to help guide you through it, that's powerful, just as Carrie's statement was to me.
BetterHelp therapists have helped over 5 million people worldwide, and they've been doing it for more than 12 years. That's millions of connections, millions of moments that change lives for the better.
And what makes BetterHelp so approachable is how easy they make it. You fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp does the work of matching you with a licensed therapist who fits your needs. If it's not the right one, switch anytime. No hard feelings and no ghosting.
I mean, unless you're literally into ghosts like we are. And with over 30,000 licensed therapists, it's the world's largest online therapy platform. Sessions even have an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 stars based on the over 1.7 million client reviews.
So this World Mental Health Day, we're joining BetterHelp in saying thank you, therapist, because behind every little breakthrough is someone who cared enough to just sit with us in the hard stuff.
If you're ready to find the right therapist for you, BetterHelp can help you start that journey. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/APC.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/APC.
Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode and celebrating the people who make the world a little lighter one session at a time.
All right, picture it. Boston in the roaring 20s. The city is booming. Speakeasies are all the rage. And people, sadly, are still grieving over the First World War and the Spanish flu. It was a lot of changes.
Did you know that, well, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that the Spanish flu happened in 1920 and then COVID happened in 2020. And it's like every 100 years on like whatever 20, some big like pandemic happens.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. I think it's been like 3 times.
Are we going to be alive for the next one?
No.
Okay. Shit. Well, that sucks. I mean, not sucks that we, you know.
Look, if we lived that long, it would kill us. The pandemic itself.
I just want to know what it is.
Goddamn, you're nosy.
I really am. That would be like, why haven't you crossed over yet? I'm waiting on the next pandemic. Ugh.
Watch that have been like a complete online lie that I never saw that it was a lie. And somebody's going to message us and be like, you know, that's not right, right? And I'm like, ah.
Well, good. I hope they do before I die. And I will my ghost to stay here so I can see it. Anyway, speaking of all the death, that's what they had been faced with. So every family, every person had felt the loss of a loved one. They were desperate for proof that their loved ones weren't gone forever. You know, they were waiting around for the next 2020. And we've talked about this before. When something's like that, people latch on to anything and other people are like, oh, well, I'll make a dime out of this. And that's kind of when the whole spiritualist movement happened. Because, I mean, we had the Fox sisters back in the 1800s. Now with the spiritualist movement, mediums were all the rage. And they were claiming that they could, you know, fill that gap between the living and the dead. And right in the middle of all these mediums was me, an extra large pizza. No, but you got it, mediums.
I get it. Okay. It's out of Leo season, right?
But really, there was a woman and her name was Mina Stinson Crandon. Though to the world, she became known as Marjorie because apparently that was her stage name. She was like, what is spooky? Marjorie.
Is this where Large Marge came from? Pee Wee Herman? Why, when we interject like that, do we take our voices up 8 octaves? It literally annoys myself.
Okay. Mina was born in 1888 in Princeton, Ontario, Canada. She was the youngest of 6 children and she grew up on her family's farm. Now, out of all of her siblings, she was the closest to her older brother, who was 5 years older, Walter. Now, Walter worked on the railway. That's a lot of, what is it, consonants that give me trouble? Is that the word?
Yeah.
Like the R's and the W's that get mixed up?
Sure. It's consonants.
So Walter worked on the railway, and in 1911, tragedy struck. He wasn't trying to get someone's hat like in Fried Green Tomatoes, but he was just 28 years old, and Walter was killed in a horrible accident when a freight wagon toppled off the tracks and crushed him.
Poor guy, but that you just flew through freight wagon with no issues is shocking. Because she worked real hard on Walter worked on the railway.
I did. Well, and this is not the right thing that I should have put here, but I said, and his death crushed her.
Donna.
Sorry. Now, Mina was intelligent. She was talented. Like, she was the belle of the ball. Much like me, you know, Aaliyah. No, I'm just, the eyes Carrie gave me, like, are you fucking kidding me? I was joking on that one. But she finished secondary school at 17, moved to Boston, and she worked as the secretary for the Union Congressional Church. Never heard of that, but sounds congressional. She was also a very accomplished cello player, and she performed in the church's orchestra. In 1910, she married a man named Earl Rand, who was a grocer. And if you're in the Patreon and you listen to the bloops, you'll remember that one because that one got me. So 3 years later, they gave birth to their son, John. But the marriage soured quickly, was left out of the cooler.
Oh my God.
But by 1918, she divorced him. That same year, she was working part-time as an ambulance driver. Which is very weird, right? Like, do people, like, I thought ambulance drivers were EMTs.
Probably not back then.
Back then it was just like, can you drive?
I mean, back then people could just be like, all right, I'm a doctor. What year did you say?
1918.
Oh, I thought you said 1910. I mean, that's not a big deal. Wait.
I'm sorry. No. I'm sorry. Wait.
I meant to say 1810, and I said 1910. This is why you can't listen to me with dates.
What date? 1918. Oh, I thought you said 1910. That would have made a difference.
That 8 years. See, there was what happened was there was legislation. Grocers could no longer.
But okay, but so she was an ambulance driver, and that is where she met her second husband, Dr. Leroy Goddard Crandon. He was a very prominent Boston surgeon. He was serving as an officer at a local Navy hospital. Now, he was 14 years older, and he had already been married twice, but hey, third time's a charm. This is her second time. They married, and suddenly Mina was living the high life on Lime Street in Boston. And that's when Marjorie was born. Because that's when the seance started. Again, spiritualist, you know. And at first, it was just for fun. Spiritualism was a dinner party kind of amusement for the upper class. Something to gossip about, something for the women to do when the men took their brandy and their cigars, you know, all of that. But soon Mina discovered that she had a flair for it. So the first time, it was one of her hubby's friends, Dr. Mark Richardson. He was a Harvard professor of medicine who on paper was, you know, a respectable gentleman, but the man was grieving very hard. Both of his young sons had died from polio back in 1909, and after he attended a seance somewhere else, he came away convinced that his sons were still hanging around in spirit. So Dr. Richardson had gotten so into it, he was like, hey, we should do it at the dinner party that y'all are going to hold. Like, let's just try it. And because, you know, he was like Harvard fancy, they were like, okay, yeah. Like, if he believes in this, like, maybe it's not just like a gag. This is actually something. Like, we should try this. Also, Dr. Richardson loved a theme because he even built a special seance table to do this at. Like, he wasn't just like, let's just do it at your dinner table. Like, they were very serious. So one night, six of them sat under a red light and the table starts kind of tipping and rapping almost immediately. And then they began the whole process of elimination of, are you doing this? No, I'm not doing this. Are you doing this? And to rule people out because everyone's like, well, I'm not doing it. You have to be doing it. You know, that whole thing. Because they're logical. They were like, okay, well, now, Carrie, you leave. And we're going to see if the table's still doing this. Okay, Carrie left. Now, you know, like one after the other, that's how it is. And turns out, after they ruled everyone else out, Mina was the one making the table act possessed.
Like she was wiggling it, or because she was there, it was like,
yeah, because she was there.
Gotcha.
Quote unquote. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So since this became such a like, wait, am I like destined to do this? Like, okay. And again, she's had grief in her life and everything. So she kind of leaned into that and she started practicing. And she claimed that during these times, her brother Walter would come through from the other side. And Walter's personality was nothing like the other mediums conjured, because he was brash, he was sarcastic, and he was vulgar, so we would have loved him. He would call out sitters with jokes, like sometimes dirty ones, or even like bark orders to be like, no, you have to do this, like Walter says to do this kind of thing. One of his most famous lines was when a doubter was questioning him. He said, I may be dead, but I'm no damn fool.
Oh, burn.
Now, Mina's seances, or Marjorie's seances, they were like stepping into a supernatural circus. Everything was happening at once. The raps on the table would be like a dainty tap of a fingernail, or it could sound as heavy as a boot slamming against the floor. And they weren't just random. Like, they would answer questions in a special code of 8 words, kind of like a ghost Morse code. And then came the lights. They would have little glowing orbs 2 to 5 inches wide, described as pale, mobile, and not giving off any actual illumination. Basically, ghost fireflies, like just zipping around the room. People swore they smelled perfumes out of nowhere, even though no one had spritzed anything. They would hear musical sounds like chimes, bugles, clock bells, even though there were no instruments in sight. The furniture would get shifted around. Cabinets would be smashed open. Tables would lift into the air while the sitters were all perched on top of like the table. There were some reports of like, it's called a porting, I believe. But it's how, like, Jeff the Mongoose and stuff would have, like, a potato come out of the air. And it's just, like, something coming from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was roses that would appear out of nowhere. There was a live pigeon that came out of nowhere. Just weird shit like that that would happen. And on top of all of that, Mina's seances would get a little risque. Because she was wild, she was unpredictable, but man, she was thrilling. But something that has to be talked about is that Mina was doing something that no one else was doing. It was not uncommon for her to hold these sessions in the nude.
What? Why?
And according to some, she was really good at making her pussy pop some shit out, okay?
What?
Yeah, like,
why did you have to say it like that?
Pop that pussy.
That's not how it goes.
Wait, what is it?
I can't. I don't know why. I just got very embarrassed and I can't say it.
Anyway, but you know, like how other people have their little things where they can pop a quarter. Well, she could pop ectoplasm.
Ew.
Out of her vajayjay.
This is an awful story.
But so... Let me get more comfortable. And then just fucking take off all your thing. You got titty tassels on. But with all of this, you would think you'd have to pay a pretty penny to see her goods and the goods that she would produce. But she didn't charge a fee. And that gave her a huge advantage because she wasn't a, you know, a backroom charlatan that was, you know, taking pennies from widows and like, you know, just waiting by grave sites to be like, do you want to talk to your loved one?
Yeah.
You know, trying to get money from that. Like, it was more her living in her fancy house on Lime Street and being like, come if you want to, like, just come see for yourself. And people did. Scientists, reporters, aristocrats.
I have to think about that every time I go to say it. Like, okay, which one was the Disney movie?
I know. God, why did they do that to us? And a lot of them were, you know, a mix of skeptics and believers, but also probably just some that wanted to see some tits.
All you ladies pop your pussy like this. Make it summer, don't make no miss them. That's all I know.
Okay, well, that checks.
Me. That's not right, Donna. Also me. Don't know the words. That checks, too.
So, while she's doing her whole shebang with her thing.
Did you write that down?
No.
Okay.
But, whew,
you would.
I would have, yeah. If I would have thought of it at the time, definitely would have. And probably would put, hee hee. But the timing couldn't have been better because Scientific American magazine had just launched a contest. And not that she really needed cash or anything, but it would be more about winning the title. But it was a cash prize for any medium who could prove their powers under controlled conditions. So like this is, you know, the science part, the supernatural part, just, you know, dueling it out. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Why do they have to have such long names?
Doyle rules.
Oh, God. But he was the author of Sherlock Holmes and so many other things. But he was one of Marjorie's biggest believers.
What?
And maybe it's because he liked what she was, you know, showing. But, you know, like, ooh, look into my two crystal balls here. Rub them right here. But anyway, but he really was a believer in her powers. And it wasn't long before he had recommended her to the editors of Scientific American, again, who had the contest going. And so it had six men, of course, only men, investigate the visual psychic manifestations. It was like a round robin of a tournament style thing, whatever sports balls say. But Mina, or Marjorie, became the front runner. She was tested over and over and over. And while a lot of people said she had to be cheating to make this happen, others were like, no, I completely believe her. We never caught her cheating. Like, even when you've tried to control this situation, she's still making this shit happen. Like, it has to be true. And then came along Harry Houdini, and he said, not no, but hell no. So by the 1920s, Houdini wasn't just like the famous escape artist. He was someone who hated mediums. Hated them.
Why?
Because he had been heartbroken over the death of his mother and had tried to reach her through seances. But every time, like, he would go, he just found the people just who wanted the money.
Mm.
And so he's like, oh, like, y'all are all frauds. And so he had this, like, vendetta against them. And from that point on, he made it his mission to expose them. And when he heard about Mina, he zeroed in on her. And the clash was electric between them because he got himself on the committee for the Scientific American Committee because they're like, Houdini wants to be with us? Absolutely.
Was it electrifying? Like, are we shipping them or did they actually hate each other?
No, they hated each other.
Okay.
Because he's like, I am science. But also, he's very much a showman and stuff too.
Right.
And then she's like, I'm this woman who has supernatural powers and like, you're threatened by me kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really was just like palpable between them two. Now, Houdini, he didn't think she was charming. He might have thought she was beautiful, but he wasn't swayed by it. He didn't care if she was, you know, nude or whatever. He was sure she was a fraud. So he designed a custom box, a wooden cabinet that would restrain her hands and feet during seances so she couldn't secretly move objects. And Mina hated the boxes. She said that they blocked her spiritual energy and interfered with Walter's communication, you know, Walter being her dead brother who would come out. But Houdini insisted on it. And so she's like, fine, okay. And because of like just the, I feel like he was like the Simon Cowell to her being, you know what I mean? It was just like everyone wanted to know what he was going to say, but everyone wanted to see her next thing too. So it's like, want to see her, but also what's his commentary on it? Like, yeah. What's he going to say about it? And the battle spilled over to the press. Houdini had talked to different people and said she would palm objects in the dark and she would use her free foot to ring bells and knock on the tables. And he said that ectoplasm that comes out of her vag and her throat and all the things, he said it was made from raw animal liver.
Ooh.
Or surgical gauze.
Ooh. And wait, she what? Would,
yeah, and she would hide it under her dress.
But wasn't she naked?
But then, like, when she would become topless, but she would still have, like, the bottom on. And that's, you know, then, like, ooh, this is coming up from, you know, whatever. I don't know. Could you imagine her having that up her badge, but going to get, what is it, that detoxifying thing that...
A douche?
No, but, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow made it big. She was like, you need a facial for your thing. And like, no? But it was like, you would sit on a like, stool.
Like
and,
a sitz bath, kind of?
What's that?
Like where you sit and you have water for your hoo-hoo?
I guess, but it was like steam rising up.
Oh, okay.
Like a facial.
Mm.
Anyway, but I'm just thinking about like them being like, it's calm, it's this. And then like this fucking ectoplasm snake thing comes coming up. Oh, anyway. But Houdini said, I have never met a medium who could produce a single phenomena that could not be duplicated by a magician. And for that, they're a fraud. And again, Houdini, he went after Mina with every trick in his skeptic's little handbook. He would, you know, do the boxes, do the cabinets. But Mina, she was a little, she was feisty, but she was sneaky. One famous incident involved a wooden cabinet box with a little bell placed on top. Now, during the seance, sure enough, the bell rang in the dark. But when the lights came on, the lid of the box had been forced open. And Harry Houdini jumped on it. Was like, she cheated. Somehow she reached it and she rang it herself. So in the next round, Mina asked for the sides of the cabinet to be closed so her hands could move more freely. After the seance, there was a ruler discovered inside the box. And so Houdini was saying that she had used the ruler, holding it in her mouth and pressing it against her neck to nudge the bell. But I'm like, okay, but she's talking and stuff. Like, she's doing stuff. So I feel like you would hear her, like, so then...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. But whatever. Of course, the supporters were rolling their eyes, but the other people were like, exactly. That, you know, like, The ruler sealed it. Now, some of the judges in the contest were convinced she was genuine. They swore that they had watched her closely. They had, you know, restrained her arms at points. And still, there were things that happened that they could not explain. And then, of course, Walter, her brother, and he would have like little one-liners when Houdini would do something. And one was, Houdini is scared of me. That's why he talks so much. And the whole thing, like I said, became a circus, you know, it was everywhere. And it was kind of like, is Houdini this jealous showman who is like unwilling to admit that he's wrong about her? Like, sure, he's found these other people, but like, is he just trying to destroy her for his own purpose, like his own mission?
Yeah.
To be like, see, told you no one was true. And it's like, you're literally like making shit up now. Or like, really, was Mina lying? Now, Mina did not win the Scientific American Prize because no one could agree. Like, the committee was divided. So Houdini said that, you know, he didn't believe her, but there were a few that were like, I mean, he kind of bullied us into saying we don't believe her, like, but we believed her. But it really didn't matter if she won or not, because she had gotten more press. He had gotten more press than she would have if she won it, you know?
Yeah.
And she didn't need the money. So that wasn't what was driving her. She was one of the most well-known mediums at the time. But fame is a fickle, fickle thing, just like Carrie.
You're not wrong.
Because over time, more people started weighing in on like being a skeptic. There was a report that came out saying that her ectoplasm was scraps of fabric that had like some like gelatin or something mixed in it, so it would give that weird shape and stuff. Some say that no, she, like, the male investigators didn't see what she was doing because they were too busy looking at her tits and her twat.
Yeah.
And then also people said sometimes they weren't just looking, because she would get a little free and would maybe do some stuff.
What?
Or like, just, she was a real flirt and just would kind of flaunt herself and like, you know, kiss up the side of his face and
whisper in it. I don't believe that.
And stuff like that. No, no, no. She really would.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, they're not just lying, but like, she would do that. But again, it was just kind of like her wild, thrilling, like, you know, and at the time she was like blonde, bombshell in the 20s, you know? So it's like, ooh, hoo, hoo. And even though the skeptics were out there, she still had her loyal followers who would come to see her channel Walter, come to see her talk to the dead. And it was mostly wealthy people who lived around her, or like different elite people from abroad and things like that. And they would say that they would feel Walter's hands on them and like all this stuff. And so again, you either believed her or you didn't. There was no what in between.
Yeah.
Mina died in 1941, but unlike the Fox sisters who confessed to fraud and other mediums who were, you know, exposed by Houdini and the like, she never was conclusively caught. Because even though, you know, that whole ruler thing, there was someone who came out, and it was Jim Collins, who was Houdini's assistant. He came out and said that he planted the ruler in the cabinet to discredit
what?
Mina. Yeah.
Man, people are shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's just do this fairly.
Right. Because when you get to doing that, like, you're both wrong.
Right.
Even if she's faking it, but if you have to fake that she's faking it
to try to prove your point, exactly.
Like, ugh. So, yeah.
You're just as bad. You're literally no better.
Yep. And so Mina lived in that kind of gray space where the unexplained still lingers. You know, she might have been a gifted woman who was gifted in a lot of things, you know, who knows? Or she was just a performer who knew how to blend, you know, theater, charisma, and some nice tits to just really live out her own fantasy. You know, just maybe that was how she let loose.
Yeah.
But that was Mina Crandon, a.k.a. Marjorie.
I don't like that he rigged the competition too. You know, like he rigged it in his favor, just like he was saying that she would.
Mm-hmm.
Because if she really is faking, then actually catch her in it. Like, it just shows that you're not as good as you think you are if you can't actually catch her in it.
Yeah.
Now, would I be able to catch her in it? Absolutely not. Because I will watch those magician TikToks where they show you how magicians do things. And I still have to watch it like a couple of times to see what the hell they did.
Oh, me too.
There's literally no way that I would be able to see that in real time.
No. But the thing is that she wasn't taking money from anyone.
Right.
Okay. So she wasn't preying on anyone like, come. It was more of a theatrical performance.
Well, either way, though, she is, like, if she's faking it, she is taking advantage of people in their vulnerability, like, in their most vulnerable state.
And yes, that is true. But again, she wouldn't be like, I don't know. I think it was more of a sideshow with her and Walter, the ectoplasm and stuff. It wasn't so much about her connecting to Aunt Susie from the other side kind of thing. But what I wanted to say is, even if she was a fraudster, I bet she was entertaining, and I bet I would like, it would be like a,
she definitely would have gotten the golden buzzer on America's Got Talent.
But no, what's the, like a cabaret, burlesque. She would have had a burlesque show that had mediumship, and she probably would have said, like, there's no medium here. But I would have liked that too, because I like seeing magicians. And
yeah,
I
me
know
too.
They're not actually doing magic, but I'm like, that's a fucking skill.
Well, like, absolutely.
That, like, that is really good.
Wait, I think about that watching these videos. I'll think about how, yes, it's sleight of hand, but the fact that they are that planned far in advance to be prepared to do some of those things, like to hide a card here or do this there or do this there. And I'm like, how are you, like, how do you even know to do that, you know?
Right. And I'm telling you, the magicians on the cruises, they get me every time. I'm like, I'm going to see exactly what he's doing, because it's up close, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's tabletop magic. And every time I'm like, wait, how did you do that, though?
I can't see it in real time. Well, do you think she's real?
No.
Me neither. Entertaining, yes.
Yeah. You know, but I really wish fucking Sylvia Brown was real.
Yeah. I know, all of these things, you really do see how they, like, are a mentalist.
Yeah.
It just sucks, too, because you really do want it to be real, and then it's not, and it's like, damn. Because there's even a mentalist on TikTok that, like, shows you how Teresa Caputo is, like, he's, like, firm that she's a mentalist, and this is how she does it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Okay, well, moving on to my story. So this is a recommendation in the email from Chelsea S. Okay, this is a story about Selena Shelley Faye Not Afraid. She was born June 18th, 2003, on the Crow Reservation in Bighorn County in Montana. And by the way, Selena had a twin sister named Zoe. And they were the youngest to five kids from Jacquelina, Big Hair, and Leroy Not Afraid. So Selena is every trope from every true crime thing when you describe, like, how amazing someone is.
She could light up a room.
Yeah, she's very, like, outgoing, kind, just, like, an all-around great human. Like,
oh, like me.
No. She was a junior at Hardin High, and she was very involved in sports. She was a jack of all trades when it came to sports. She was, like, volleyball, basketball.
Why would she not be a Jill of all trades?
Because that's not the saying.
Okay.
But she was really involved with horses, and she wanted to be an Indian relay rider.
Horses are expensive.
Ain't that the truth? And I'm so scared of them, and I don't know why. Colby loves them, but I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, weirdly enough, we used to have them in front of our house when they were behind the police department in that field.
Yeah.
Because it was nothing then. And so we would go feed them. If you told me to get in the thing with them, I would have been like, are you fucking kidding me? But outside of that, I'd be like, oh, here's an apple. Here's this, a carrot.
But here's the thing. Selena's life was filled with tragedy. In 2013, when she and her twin Zoe were only 11, Zoe died by suicide. And then a short time after that, in 2017, her brother Preston was shot and killed in some sort of altercation with police. And then not long after that, her oldest sister Tristan was killed in a hit and run.
Holy shit.
So by the time Selena was 16, it was just her and her older brother. So this family had just had tragedy upon tragedy upon tragedy. So on New Year's Eve of 2019, Selena is 16 years old. Selena and some of her friends were going to go to Billings, Montana, because where they lived was like an hour or two away from Billings, Montana. And so they were going to go to this house party. They were going to drink and have fun, spend the night, and then come home. Now, her parents knew about this. This wasn't like some big secret, like she was sneaking away to go out of town and go to a house party and drink. Her family knew that this was going to happen. And I mean, it's one of those things like you're staying the night, you're safe. Okay. See you in the morning. So the next day, on New Year's Day, they start coming home. I never really saw anything that said who all was in the van, but it's like five or so friends. And I also really never saw the person who was driving the van's name. But this story is just going to make your blood boil. So just get ready because there's a lot of unknown. So on the way home from Billings, the van started having some issues, sputtering, engine trouble, whatever. So they had pulled off onto a rest stop at around 2 o'clock that afternoon. So when they stopped, everybody gets out of the van. He tries to, you know, tinker and fix the van and he gets it back running. So it's like, everybody pile back in, let's go. Now, also, it should be noted that some things said that they were continuing to drink on the way home in the van. So by some accounts, at this point, Selena is drunk too. But this is what makes literally no sense. Well, one of the 875 things in the story that doesn't make sense. But for some reason, the guy driving the van was like, okay, Selena, you and Arlena, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name right, y'all wait here because the driver's mom was like just like 15 minutes behind him on the interstate coming back home. And he was like, y'all wait here and then my mom will just pick y'all up. So I honestly, like, why? I have no idea why this was the case.
Like, how were they going to get home? Just walk from the thing?
No, the mom was going to come and pick him up. But like, when she got to the next...
No, the other people.
Oh, they were all going to take the van because the van had gotten... He had, like, fixed it for them to go off. So, this story
that makes... no sense.
I'm telling you, this story makes no fucking sense.
Okay.
So, the van drives off with all the other people except for Selena and Arlena. And this is the last time that anyone ever sees Selena alive.
What the fuck?
So, about 10 minutes later... the mom gets to the rest stop and the girls are nowhere to be seen. So she starts looking around and she finds Arlena in this ditch with scratches all over her. She has no shoes on and it's like almost like she's kind of disoriented and she has no idea where Selena is.
That is so scary. It really shows like if she really was 10 minutes away.
Right.
Like, it can happen in a blink of an eye.
Arlena does say that Selena had run into this field, like right by it. But there was just some inconsistencies. And it was just, the details kind of were changing. And I don't know if it's because she had been drinking. I don't know if it's because something had happened to her. I don't know if, like literally, was she drugged? Like, no one, like, we don't know. So Selena's family gets word that she's missing. And they also figure out that Arlena's not a good resource and historian for them to kind of figure out what happened. And so they start looking for her. and they notify all the law enforcement, and they start searching for Selena. Selena's mother, Jackie, my heart like almost actually aches for her, because she has now lost 4 of her 5 children. And it just speaks to like the missing and murdered indigenous population, like mostly women, of course, but like even her sons too. Like, it's just awful.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
So her mom does all the things. She like camps out in her car around the rest stop, like for days, like trying to find, and keep in mind, it is very cold. We're in Montana in like, at this point, January 1st. Like,
oh,
it is
hell no.
Freezing cold.
Yeah, no, no, no. Caitlin lives in Montana and it's fucking freezing like in October.
Right. And her mom was like, I'm not leaving this spot. Like, I am staying here and I am looking for her. Well, the police do help. They bring in dogs. They bring in drones. They bring in helicopters, ATVs, horses, literally everything to try to figure out what happened to Selena.
Could you imagine, though, if a horse found her?
I know.
Like, that would be the best.
Well, they search and they search and they search. And on January 20th, her body is found. But here's where it's even weirder. Her body was found less than a mile from the rest stop. Like, literally in a field that had been searched over and over and over again. And just like, there she was. One day was her body.
What the fuck? So definitely wasn't there before.
Right. So the autopsy showed that she died of hypothermia. And they ruled her death an accident.
So, like, she got so drunk she died because she was out in the cold and no one's fault. But how is it not anyone's fault when someone had moved her body?
Exactly.
Either before or after her death, someone moved her body and, like, didn't say, hey, I found someone who's, like, dead in the field. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, they say that there weren't any signs of foul play, but her family's like, hell no. We searched that place multiple times. Like, there's no way that we searched that field with everything that we searched, including drones and helicopters, and y'all didn't find her. Like, there's no fucking way. And they're like, also, why did the dogs not pick up on her scent and her tracks and
right.
all of that? So it's like, what? Are you kidding? Like, there's literally no way that... There's literally no way that she was in this spot and died of hypothermia and no one saw any indication of tracks or anything like that.
Wow.
But also, like, if her body's dumped there, there's so many questions. And this is a very, very short story because really, that's it. That's all we know. Like, this is probably one of the shortest stories I've ever done, but I really feel like her story deserves to be told because my question is, what about Arlena? Something clearly happened to her. Where did these scratches come from? And then, like, everybody in the van, did Arlena have these scratches before? And, like, why was she so disoriented when the mom got there that she can't tell what happened to Selena?
Of course, you know, like, this is all alleged because no one's done it. But it does seem very fishy that whoever was like, y'all two stay here while we go take the van somewhere, the mom's going to come pick you up. But, like, what if they had done something or I don't know. Like, just it's very fishy that y'all two can't come back, but we have the van working again.
It, like, all of a sudden you don't have room. You rode up there and you're riding halfway back and
yeah.
you all of a sudden don't have, like, it literally makes no sense.
Like, at first I wanted to, like, do a little side eye at Arlena, but...
Well, right. But, like, Arlena has had a lot of issues. After Selena's death, she went missing for a little while. But they did find her. But it just, again, it's one of those things where it's another missing indigenous woman. Then it's like, what is happening here?
But it's not fair for me to say, like, side eye to Arlena and stuff. Because I just remember the Idaho murders and... It was super strange that there were roommates who were left alive when these people were, like,
brutally
murdered. And some people were like, are they in on it? And, you know, just sometimes kids are kids and doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like something bad happens and it's like, yeah, their 911 call might have been weird, but it's like also we've been on 911 calls where like our parents are having trouble, but it's like they found their friend's body. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a whole different thing. So these people, I'm just giving them a shadow of a doubt or whatever. But like maybe Arlena and Selena were like bickering or being like, I'm not going to get back in that car. It might not, you know, do whatever. And they're like, fine. My mom's coming right up here. She'll pick you up.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, I think that with Arlena, like, I think that something happened to her too. And because the scratches and all, even if something happened to her the night before or whatever, like, she didn't have her shoes on. Like, the fact that she is, like, sitting in this ditch, confused with scratches and no shoes in freezing cold weather, like, neither one of them were dressed for this weather.
Yeah.
And so it's like, something happened. I don't know what, but I don't think Arlena is sketchy. I think she's a victim too. And I don't know what happened, but something fucking happened to those girls. But here's my thing though. If Selena had died from hypothermia, like they're saying, there's no chance in hell that she died where her body was found.
Right.
So was she like, I don't know, she had to have been kidnapped or something. Like, I don't think that she just, her family's even like, we raised her smart. Like, hello, there's a whole movement about missing and murdered Indigenous women. You can't tell me that this had not been drilled into Selena's head for years. And the fact that she had had so much heartbreak in her family was like, no, we talked about how to be safe, how to not get hurt, like, and all the things that she specifically had been through with her siblings. Like, they were like, she would not have just wandered off into this field with not the right clothes on and all of that. Like, mm-hmm. she would not have done that. So it's like, I really think that there's no way that she died where she was found. So how did she die? Was she taken off somewhere and just left outside? And then they were like, wow, nobody's found her body and it's been 3 weeks. Maybe we should go dump her back where they're doing the search. And then they just went and dumped her body back. Like, it has to be something like that where she was, even if she was killed immediately and not kept and like kidnapped or whatever. Like, I just think that there's no way that what they're saying happened is what happened.
Right. Well, and also it was a field too. It wasn't just like this dense forest.
Right. Yeah. I'm not really sure like what the terrain was because I don't fucking know. But
I mean, I'm sure like a field could be like the overgrown kind of thing, but not, I think it's a little bit different than, you know, when people are in a forest and it's like, oh, well, we didn't see them over there because of XYZ. Like, this is more like,
well, right.
I don't know.
And I just, I'm just like, again, with a helicopter and drones and all of that, like, I just don't know how she was missed.
Yeah. And to your point, this is what, 2019? So it's not like this is in the 80s where,
exactly,
you know, like, oh, well, okay. No, you're right. They have drones. They have, and like, they have actual like drones that have good video, good surveillance,
right,
and all of that. I don't know. I just, that doesn't make sense to me. But also, did they not say that she had any like defensive wounds?
Right.
Or,
and no, like, and I don't
assaulted?
Know. No, I never saw anything about like the full blown autopsy. Like, was there any evidence of sexual assault or anything like that? I never saw anything like that. And this case did bring a lot of attention to the area because there's like the area that she lives in. I heard this on 10 Minute Murder podcast, but they were saying like the number of people who are missing in her area is like an exorbitant amount. So there are, in the Crow Nation, there are 14,000 members. And there are, like, at the time of this podcast, which was like last year, there were like 11 currently missing. And when you look at that compared to the same number of people missing, like Yellowstone, not like oh, people went to Yellowstone and became missing, but like the true like area of Yellowstone, that it has 12 times the population, and he said 27 different indigenous tribes, and in all of that, they have 11 people missing. So it's the number, like when you look at the percentage of people in the Crow Nation, it's like an exorbitant amount of people who are missing and all of that. So something's going on, but it just brings up how much is going on with indigenous people, period, with cycles of trauma, poverty, addiction, systemic neglect, and their distrust in the system, because I feel like the system has even failed Selena, just being like, oh, it was hypothermia. Okay, well, maybe it was hypothermia, but what put her in that position?
Right.
Now, I will say that most recently, the person who like had the party at the house, Deandra Pittman, she was charged with a misdemeanor for providing alcohol to minors. And she was like 20 at the time. But literally before, on my way home, before we recorded, I listened. I was like, this podcast says, it's called We Are Resilient is the name of the podcast. And it's a podcast by Indigenous women only about missing and murdered Indigenous people. So like, we definitely want to support them and give them a listen, but they do a great special update. And they're actually how I found this out. When I was Googling it, this never popped up. But I was like, I'm so glad I listened to this special update by them, because they're literally the only one where I saw this. Early January, I think, of this year, a guy named Robert Allen Mourning Bromley III, who was the driver. So remember, I was like, I don't know his name. Well, I forgot that I had found this and he was a driver. I suck. I know. But he is the one that was a driver, and they charged him. So on Bighorn County News, it says that the court documents allege that his actions created a substantial risk of death or serious bodily injury, and that he was aware of the cold temperatures and that they were both intoxicated. And he was charged with felony criminal endangerment, and it's punishable up to 10 years and a fine of $50,000. And so this is like brand new. Like, this is not going to trial or anything like that, but he was arrested. Like, he was charged with this.
Oh, shit.
This is a little bit of some justice for her, but I really, really do think that there's more to her story and Arlena's story for that matter. Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm saying her name right. I'm intentionally not saying her last name because I did find it, but because she was a minor when this happened and stuff. And so, I think she was a minor because some stuff said it was her and an adult woman. So I'm like, does that mean that she was not? I never really saw her anyway. Because the woman that they arrested for the providing the alcohol, she was only 20. So I'm like, how old was everybody? Dunno. But like I said, I mean, this case got a lot of national attention. And Selena's mother, Jackie, I cannot imagine the grief, the pain that she lives with every single day.
Yeah.
I also just don't understand, so they say that foul play was, not a thing because there were no tire tracks or footprints or anything like that. And I'm like, and there, no wounds that they said or anything like that. But I'm like, okay, but here's the thing. Where were her footprints? Where's what led her to that area? Like, it literally makes no sense. This makes zero sense. And it's given me, it's given me that case that you did with the guy that everybody knows where he kept calling his mom.
Oh, and Bryce Laspisa.
Yes. It's like, what the fuck happened? Something happened at that rest stop. I don't know what it was, but something fucking happened. Yeah. And nobody's talking.
But also, if they have enough to charge him for that, we don't know if he's going to be, we don't know what the outcome's going to be.
Yeah.
But if they had enough to charge him for that, I feel like there's something there.
I don't know, because basically what they're saying is they're holding him responsible for having left them on the side of the road drunk without something to keep them warm. And they're charging him for that. So he could get charged with that even if she just died of hypothermia.
Yeah, no, I know. But it just seems weird. It just seems weird to me for that. How old was he?
I'm like, he could have been I don't know about should, but he maybe should, but could have been charged with, I feel like manslaughter or something like that of like an unintentional homicide. I don't know if that's a thing, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Not neglect. What's the word I'm looking for? Like they.
Negligence. No.
Yeah. Like negligent homicide.
Yeah. I was right. Definitely did not say that with my full chest. So, because I was like, negligence, maybe? I don't know. And I want to know what the other people in the truck or the van heard and stuff, because why did they get out? Why is he saying that? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. What caused that?
I don't know.
Oh, there's so many unknowns.
There's literally, like, I feel like we could make an entire episode just on, like, well, what about this? And what about this? And there's literally so many unknowns.
I can see the Bryce correlation, but it also reminds me of that case. I think you've done him, but it's the guy in the gym mats.
Like, oh, I never did him. No, that case, I don't know why that one gives me anxiety and I've never done it.
It does give me, like, yeah.
I remember listening to that one on Crime Junkie. I think they did a good job that one.
Yeah.
There's just so many pieces to that one, too.
But it's like, how did he, again, with how the shoes were, how this was, how his body was, all of this, it's like, but how did this happen? And it could have been an accident. This could have been an accident. But how and why? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, Kendrick Johnson is his name.
But I don't know. Just something is not right.
No, it's not. And I don't know. There's a lot of Reddit threads, too, about it, about what people think and all of that. And I don't know.
I'm just glad that they did find her body and they could, you know, lay her at rest mm-hmm. and know that she is with her other loved ones, if you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's not just like, is she still being held somewhere? Is she alive? You like, they know that they have that. And they have one thing in the midst of the unknown. So many unknowns.
So thank you so much for this recommendation. And y'all definitely check out the We Are Resilient podcast. It's We Are Resilient AMMIP true crime podcast, which is Missing and Murdered Indigenous People. But I just think, like, how is this still a thing? You know, how are we in 2025 still talking about cases that are really fresh and about people of color, people who are Indigenous, people who, you know, in any marginalized population that are being killed and missing in staggering numbers compared? And it's like, they're just, because there's so many systemic issues that go along with it of, like, not only the way that they're treated and their cases are handled, but also the distrust of these communities with law enforcement. And it's like, well, of course these are generations of trauma against law enforcement and people in power. And so of course they don't trust them. Of course they're going to be leery and all of that. And it's like, there has to be something, like there has to be an answer for this. And it's just, I think one answer is bringing light to it, to the fact that this is a fucking problem. And this, I don't know. It just makes me angry.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for the recommendation. Y'all check out the podcast. And don't forget to like, subscribe, review, all the things. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.
Are you someone who watches every true crime documentary the day that it releases and then find yourself always wanting to know more, Googling the timelines, red flags, and then falling into the social media rabbit hole? Well, I'm here to do all of that for you, bringing the facts, theories, and details that no one else is covering on my hit true crime podcast, Serialistly with Annie Elise. Whether it's everything with the Idaho 4 case now that the documents are unsealed, or shocking cases you've never heard of, packed with love triangles, cults, and twists you won't see coming. With over 1 million downloads a week, I break it down for you just like your best friend would. Serialistly with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.